Today is May 11th, 1989. My name is Tika Ward. I'm with Ray Fry. We are at Actors Theater of Louisville in the Bensinger Building. And you have been an ATL resident company member since the 74-75 season.
That's right.
How did you happen to, well, oh, I know what I want to say. Start with your background first.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to do.
Well, I grew up in Gary, Indiana, and graduated from high school there, and went from there to Indiana University, and I was there for a year. I left IU and went to Northwestern, and I was at Northwestern for about a year and a half, and then I left Northwestern and went to New York. This was in the mid-1940s, and I worked in New York. I was in New York 3 weeks when I got my first job. And I had gone to New York with $60 and a one-way ticket. So I was very lucky. The show that I was in that I got a part in New York ran a week. So I was unemployed and really had nowhere to go. And I was taken in by a friend whom I had met. So I stayed with him until the next job came up, which was about 2 months later. And then I toured with the show through the United, mostly in the eastern United States, and came back and got in the USO and went with the USO company to Europe. I was in Europe just at the end of the war. I spent Thanksgiving of 1945 in Berlin. Then I came back to the States. I was with the USO about 18 months. I came back to the States and tried to rev up my professional career in New York again and played stock. I got my first stock job playing in Kiss and Tell, which is the play that I had played in the USO. And that was at the Berkshire Playhouse in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. And then I did several shows and worked several jobs and finally ended up in the Jose Ferrer Cyrano de Bergerac on Broadway. And I played, I don't know, six parts, I think. Spent most of my time off stage changing my costume. Mm-hmm. And then I was drafted into the Army. And the Army of Occupation in the Pacific, and was sent to Okinawa, where I taught literacy training. I was in the literacy training program in Okinawa, and I was there about 13 months and got out. Excuse me. Decided to go back to New York and try to get my career going again. And I was recalled into the Army and sent to Korea. And I was in Korea about 14 months. I was part of Special Service and was in charge of an all-soldier show, which was fortunate. I at least was not shot at. However, we did play pretty close to enemy lines. They captured some Chinese communists who had seen our show from trees, we were later told. When I got out of the Army the second time, New York seemed kind of hopeless to me. And I had decided, after having been in two hits in New York and played the same show eight times a week for 2 years, that was really not what I wanted to do. And so I decided to go back to school. And I went to College of the Pacific in Stockton, California, which is now the University of the Pacific. Excuse me. And I was there a year, and then I went from there to San Francisco State, where I finally, after I think 13 or 14 years, got my undergraduate degree. And then I began work on my master's at Stanford, which I didn't finish. I had, at San Francisco State, I met two men, two faculty members who were forming a professional theater company in San Francisco, which became the Actors Workshop in San Francisco, and I was asked to be a member of that company. So I worked in San Francisco for 13 or 14 years. And eventually, the men, Jules Irving and Herbert Blau, Jules Irving is Amy Irving's father, were invited to take over the Vivian Beaumont Theater at Lincoln Center. And they asked me to go with them, and I did. And I worked at Lincoln Center for 9 years, for nine seasons. And then that theater closed, and I was on my own again. So I went to, I got a job at Penn State that summer, and I was playing Og, the leprechaun in Finian's Rainbow. And I was sitting in the house during a dress rehearsal and had all this green makeup on my face and sequins glued to my eyelids. And I was sitting in the house, and this man came and sat next to me and said, my name is John Jory. And I said, oh, I of course had heard of him. And he said, how would you like to come and work for me in Louisville? And I said, oh, sure, fine. Of course, not believing a word of it. And I thought, well, this is very strange. This man is obviously in the market for a leprechaun. But within a few weeks, I heard from him, and he offered me three shows in that season. And that was Flea in Her Ear and Baker's Opera and a Bill of One Acts, in which I played in Noel Coward's Red Peppers and Chekhov's Swan Song. And then he asked me if I would like to come back the next season for the whole season. I said yes, and I've been here ever since.
When he called you up, then you didn't have to audition or go through anything like that. You just came down here.
Yeah.
When you were
he had seen a lot of my work at Lincoln Center, so he knew who I was. Yeah.
What did you major in when you went to school? Those different times.
Always in the theater.
Always in the theater.
I had thought at one time that I would be a teacher, and I took I think two education courses and decided that was quite enough, and that I really couldn't cut that. So I just majored in the theater.
You also said that that you made a list of the pros and cons about New York. I read that.
Yeah, yeah. That was after after I had come here and worked for several years. I would work here during the season, and then every summer I would go back to New York for the summer, which it sounds foolish. I mean, anybody who would go to New York for the summer is... There are elevators not running to the top floor. But at one point I did sit down and make a list of the pros and cons of living in New York, and the con list was so much longer than the pro list that I decided it was time to get out, and then I moved down here full time.
When you say that you heard of John Jory in 74, 75, was it in terms of Actors Theater or just...
Well, he had been in several places. He had been, of course, at the Long Wharf in New Haven, and had been at the Cleveland Playhouse, and his name was beginning to be circulated. And then I saw, oddly enough, I saw the opening night of Tricks in New York.
Oh, tell him about
before
that.
Before I had known him at all. Well, I knew a man who was closely associated with the producer, and so I was invited to escort his wife to the opening night. And I knew nothing about it, of course. I enjoyed it. I thought it was wonderful, but other people didn't.
But you'd already heard of Actors... what was the reputation of Actors Theatre?
Well, it was becoming known as a very good place to work. And the first three shows that I did here that one season, everything seemed to go so well, and I liked the quality of the work, and I liked the people. And
people who were...
And I was offered a great variety of stuff to do, which is what I really liked a lot.
Do you remember some of the people who were here, say, Ken Jenkins?
Or... Yeah, and Pat Tovat, and Adele O'Brien, and Vaughn McBride, and I can't think offhand now. Michael Gross was here that year. And Jeffrey... I can't think of his last name. The man who eventually played the Emperor in Amadeus.
Oh dear, I don't know.
Well, it would be here. I don't see it here.
But the first name is Jeffrey?
Yeah. Well, I hope you can edit this out. I'll think of it eventually. Jeffrey Duncan Jones. That's
who it
is. Jeffrey Jones, yes.
Okay.
Yes, and he's since then has turned up in a lot of movies and is doing very well.
In addition to acting, you also direct.
Yes.
Did you direct before coming to Actors Theatre?
I'd had directed somewhat off Broadway and in regional theater previously, and there had always been so many problems, technical problems with scenery and costumes and limited budgets and props, and I mean you did a dress rehearsal. And everybody was put together with safety pins. And I eventually gave it up because it seemed so hectic that yeah, you didn't really have time to do the creative work. You just had, by sheer force, to get it on and get through it. And then when I came here and John asked me to direct at the end of my first full season, I was delighted to do that because I knew that the technical staff here was so capable, and that there were no problems. The first thing I did here was Dear Liar with Dale O'Brien and Bill Kane. And then, since then, I've been asked to direct one and sometimes two shows a year, and I enjoy it.
What's different between directing and acting for you as a...
Well, it's somewhat akin to directing is somewhat akin to acting to writing, because you have to define and analyze the problems. When you write, you have to really examine your feelings before you can put them down on paper and say, well, how do I really feel about this, or how does this character really feel about this? And by putting it on paper, you define it. And as a director, you can watch an actor having problems, and you have to define what that problem is in order to help him. I find it interesting, and in the course of directing, I've learned a great deal about acting.
Which do you prefer?
I prefer to do both.
The end of the... So this was 75, 76 when you appeared in all of the main stage
yes.
performances.
Uh-huh.
Were you surprised when he asked you to do this, or had you let him know?
Well, we'd had a very good working relationship. I did, of course, a show with Victor Jory, the Chekhov play Swan Song. And I remember I came to rehearsal one day, and it was a two-character play, and I really had very little to say. I listened sympathetically to Victor. And I came to rehearsal one day, and John said to me, he said, I am just so sick of hearing about Ray Fry. Ray Fry, he said, that's all my father talks about. And I said, John, you don't really have to worry. Victor and I are not going to run off together. And John said, I wish you would. My mother would be greatly relieved. That's one of my favorite stories about John.
The following season, 76-77, that's when we first had the New American Writers Festival.
Yes.
And you directed Reunion.
Yes. David Mamet play. Upstairs in the Victor Jory with... Bob Burris and Nan Ray. That was an interesting experience. But that seems so long ago. And they do all tend to run together. But that was the first time that play had been done, and I enjoyed dealing with that material.
Did Mamet come down here?
No, he didn't. I think he has come down here since then for the New Play Festival several years ago.
Do you remember seeing The Gin Game?
Yes. Yes, I remember it vividly. And how impressed I was with it. And then several years later, John decided to revive it. And Ann Petoniak and I did it upstairs, which was a great treat.
And then the following year, there was the second Festival of New American Plays and Getting Out.
Yes. Yes, that was an extraordinary experience. I think we all knew, it happens very rarely when you are exposed to a new play and you have sort of have no doubt about its being successful. It was just a very positive feeling. And the work on it was very intense. And you knew that it was going to work.
In the 74-75 season, your first season, is when Susan Kingsley appeared in Female Transport.
Yes.
Did you see that
one? No. That was done before I came here.
It was right before you came here?
Yeah.
Then do you recall her in Getting Out?
Oh, yeah, vividly. Yes. Yes, and we later toured that, the United States Information Agency, and we toured it to Yugoslavia. And Israel, and that year we opened the Dublin Theater Festival with Getting Out.
What is that like going on an international tour?
Well, I've done a lot of that. I have done five of those tours. Stimulating is not the right word, but it's fascinating, and you deal with simultaneous translator, that is that everyone in the audience wears a headset, and as you perform the play, it is translated, and it's difficult to do comedy in that situation, because sometimes, well, in Slavic language, where a joke in English will be three or four words, in a Slavic language it's 10 or 12. So sometimes you finish the line and then two or three beats later, the laugh comes, and it takes some adjustment. But the most interesting thing is meeting and dealing with the people in the country.
You'd been overseas before, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, Europe was much different the first time because I was right at the end of the war. So it was interesting to go back and do it again.
And then I want to ask you, in addition to doing theater, regional theater, you've done musicals.
Yes.
You've done national tours. Mm-hmm. You've done film. You've done television. I would like to discuss those.
Well, I've done a little film and a little television, not too much.
Okay. For instance, film, Bartok's Dog.
Yes. That's a play by Patrick Togat. And it was filmed here for PBS. It was filmed here in town with Deborah Headwall and Kenny Jenkins and Adele O'Brien and me. And it's been seen, I think, pretty much over the country. And it seems to be a very good treatment of the material.
Okay, what's it like? How's it different from being in, say, live theater when they're... Do you get to do takes?
Oh, yes, many, many takes. That's the one thing that I have some feeling about, and that is, in film, you are really not in control of your own performance. You do all of these takes, and then all of this film is turned over to an editor, and the editor puts your performance together. So, unless you're a big star and have some power over the final cut, you have no control of what your performance eventually turns out to be. And I find that frustrating.
So it's like that in television, too, then.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, especially when it's on film. See, this was not live television. This was taped.
So it's the same thing as if you were doing it.
Yeah, yeah. It's turned over to an editor.
Do you think that makes you perform differently when you're doing it because you know something's going to happen like that?
I don't think so. I think the major thing you have to do is to decide what really needs to be done, what the real objective is. And in this take, sometimes the take is 30 seconds. And if you have to keep that objective in mind all of the time, so that if you are working in a scene which is 5-6 minutes, you have to say to yourself, you have to decide and analyze and discover why the scene is in the script and what purpose you serve in that scene. I've done some major network television and have never been spoken to by the director. I remember one time I was in Los Angeles with a show and I got a bit part in a television production, and I did this. I played a doctor, and it was very small part, but nobody said anything to me. And finally, I just went to one of the technicians and said, after a take, I said, "Was that all right?" And he said, "Oh yeah, that's fine." But I had to have some feedback from somebody. And the thing that I really appreciated was working with Arthur Penn in a film called Target with Gene Hackman and Matt Dillon. And of course, this was a major motion picture. And I had never worked in that circumstance before. And since then, everybody has told me how lucky I was. But Arthur Penn, after every take, Arthur Penn was there with some kind of input, giving you a new idea or making you aware of certain technical things that you needed to be aware of, like where the camera was. So he was always there, and I found that gratifying.
How did all that happen to come about? That's something I wanted to ask you. When you are a resident company member, you still don't really know how many more seasons you're going to be someplace, do you?
No, you don't. No.
There's a lot of unsureness.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, if you go into this business, there are some kinds of security that you just have to forego. And that's one of them. It's very unusual. Excuse me. It's very unusual to be in such a long range project as I have been and as Adele has been.
I wanted to ask you about that, but I also wanted to ask you, do you have an agent? Do you keep your name known in other theaters? I mean, how do you get something like a film or a television? How does it work?
Well, I was on the 83 or 84 Humana Festival. I was in a play called Lemons, and I played an automobile salesman who wore a terrible toupee, and I had a lot of fun doing it. It was a very funny part. And I was at home one morning, and the telephone rang, and it was this agent from New York who had been here for the Humana and had seen Lemons, and said, "I would like to submit you for a movie." And I said, being the cynic that I have become, I said, "Oh yeah, sure." And he said, "Yeah, if you will send me some pictures, I will submit them to the director and talk to him about you." And I said, "Uh-huh, of course." And he said, "Oh, but I have to have the pictures on my desk by Monday." This was on a Friday. And I said, okay, I'll express the pictures to you and a resume. So I sent them to him, thinking that I would never hear from him again. And he called on Monday morning and said, "Well, I got the pictures, thank you. And I'm going to be seeing the director, and I'll get back to you." And I said, "Oh yeah, okay." Mm-hmm.
Did you really sound like that when you
Yes.
talked?
Because you hear a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And on Tuesday morning, the phone rang, and he said, this agent said, "Have you had your morning coffee?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Are you sitting down?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, Arthur Penn wants you to do the movie." I showed him the pictures, and he said, "Oh yes, you'll be fine." So that's how I got that movie. I mean, that's a rare circumstance, and you certainly don't live your life thinking that that's going to happen often. But it was fun. I had a good time. I spent a month in Paris.
How thrilling.
Yes, it was fun.
Did they have places for you to stay?
No. I mean, you get your salary and a per diem. and they arrange for hotel accommodations.
Do you all talk, when you're in a play or a film or anything like that, do you all ever talk to each other about it outside of being on the stage or in rehearsal?
Oh, yes, yeah.
With one another?
The great danger there, and it's something that I've become aware of, is very often people tend to try to direct one another, you know, almost unknowingly, and I think that's dangerous. I think an actor needs one director, and fellow actors unconsciously. You know, unconsciously you find yourself, and I don't do this anymore, I don't go up to somebody and discuss a scene outside of rehearsal. I think that can be dangerous, because unknowingly you find yourself asking people to do things that serve you.
I guess that's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even any conscious kind of thing, but I've since have become very careful of that, and if an actor comes to me and says, "Well, let's talk about this," I usually say, "Well, let's wait until rehearsal tomorrow, and then you talk about it in front of the director."
What do you look for in a director, if you look for something?
Someone who's done his homework.
Reading the play,
examining the period in which it's done or the social situation in which it takes place, with some knowledge of relationships in the play, how they change or don't change, some sense of comedy. You can have the best joke in the world in a play, and if it's not properly set up for you, it isn't going to work. So, and a good director is someone who knows that. And knows at any given moment who is the straight man and who is the comic. And that takes some doing. And staging, there's always the matter of focus. Where should an audience be looking at this point, at any given point? Who is the center of attention here? And when does it change, and how does it change? And it's a complex business, and no two people do it alike. No two people do it alike.
Do you have a preference for either the Victor Jory or the main stage?
Well, I enjoy the Victor Jory very much. I like working up there. And I think I've done some of my best work up there.
Why do you like it up there?
Well, you don't. It's very intimate, and everything that you do counts. And I find that exciting. Adele and I did Virginia Woolf up there several years ago, and it was wonderful to do it there, because everybody felt involved, terrifically involved in it.
When you get a play and you know that you're going to have a part in it, what do you do? What's your process?
Well, I, for the first couple of weeks at least, or 10 days, I read the whole play every day. To find out exactly what my function in the play is, why I am in it, why this character is in this play. And then that, of course, governs everything that you do. Hopefully you end up serving the playwright. This is what I find a little disturbing sometimes about professional.
Beginning of side two, tape one. First, define what you mean by commercial theater.
A Broadway, off Broadway. Several years ago, I did an off Broadway I was in a production off Broadway of Love's Labor's Lost, and I came backstage at the intermission, and I said, "What the hell's going on out there on stage? Everything is so different. I don't know what's happening. It's not really not what we rehearsed in a lot of instances." And one of the young people in the cast said, "Oh well, so and so is there." And of course, so and so was a big agent. And so everybody was out there showing off.
I think
that's when I decided to come to Louisville.
Is there a risk of that happening during the Humana Festival?
No, I don't think so. I don't think that happens. Because the Humana Festival really is not an actor's showcase. It's a showcase for the playwright. And these things are pretty thoroughly rehearsed.
You said that you think about the play in terms of serving the playwright. Do you ever think about serving the theater goer?
Well, that is inevitable. I mean, that's one thing follows the other.
So you figure if you just serve the playwright,
and it's a good play and it's well directed and well acted, the theater goer will be happy.
It's served. Are there any plays that you've either directed or played in, acted in, that stand out in your memory?
Oh well, yeah, there are a lot of them. I've done. At the end of this season, I will have done 86 shows here in Louisville, and I did at least that many in San Francisco, more than that really. And there are a lot of them. There are some that I would like to go back and do again. I did Waiting for Godot many years ago, which was an extraordinary experience because of the play. And Aztec and Caucasian Chalk Circle, which I enjoyed. Virginia Woolf, Gin Game, Golden Pond. There are lots of them that I enjoy.
We're talking now about things that Ray Fry has directed. I wondered if there were any that he wanted to mention.
Well, I think one of the most interesting and gratifying experiences I've had as a director was doing James M. Barrie's What Every Woman Knows with Susan Kingsley. And it was at a time when Susan was becoming known as kind of a country girl in the theater. And that's what she was doing mostly. And the fact is that she had a very good background and a very good education, had gone to school in London, and was able to do a lot of things and played this wonderful Scottish woman perfectly, with not one trace of country. And I was so sorry, because I've often thought, since she's no longer with us, what a shame it was that nobody really ever got to see her do that kind of thing, because she did it so beautifully. It was a wonderful working situation. We had a good time doing it, and she was terrific. I've enjoyed a Kay Mutiny Court Martial was an extraordinary experience too. I had worked on it for about 10 days or 2 weeks or something like that, and I thought, this is very strange. This is Herman Wouk's first play. And of course, the play is so extraordinarily well put together. And I thought, how can this be? And he has not really had a successful play since then. And I went back and looked at my script, and there on the title page was the answer. The Kay Mutiny Court Martial was directed by Charles Laughton. And then when you think about that, you realize that Tom Hagen wrote Mr. Roberts, and never again a successful play. Mr. Roberts was directed by Joshua Logan. And I think these men had a great deal of input and a great deal of influence in the original and the eventual product. And that is an exciting thing is in working with new material, when you can work with the playwright.
Which you get to do.
Yes.
In the Humana Festival.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exciting. That's fun to do.
So we'll go back to your being an actor, and you read the play every day for 2 weeks. Then what do you do?
Well, it's a. It's very hard to talk about.
Well, that's okay, Dad. That's perfectly okay.
I can talk about what you hope the end result of the rehearsal period will be, and that is that you are so well acquainted with your own identity as the character in the play, that you can step out there and react to the first thing that happens to you, and then from then on it's just a series of reactions. It's my acting teacher, I've studied with a truly great acting teacher at Northwestern, a woman named Alvina Krauss, who is quite well known, and she used to say to us, whenever you feel unsure of yourself, the best way to overcome that is to concentrate on someone else. And she said that generally will serve you better than anything, because when you concentrate on someone else and really listen to what they are saying to you, you will have no doubt about what you have to say back. But by concentrating on someone else, it makes it an outgoing process. And if you know who you are, you have no problems. You know, you just know who you are and react to other people. Acting really is reacting. I know that's a cliche, but it's true.
When do you all have your first... when do you all have your first reads? Like, how do you do that? Where do you go? And you all stand there and read together, don't you? Isn't that what
we usually do that around a table?
Oh, you said.
Yeah, that. With a director. And director, sometimes will explain to you how he feels about the play and what he hopes to do with it, and where he hopes to go. And sometimes it depends upon the play, you know. Sometimes you can spend a whole week doing table work. And sometimes you rehearse. I've been doing this more and more. And I picked this up from John, which is very valuable. You rehearse for 2 or 2.5 weeks, and you get the thing on its feet, and everybody knows where they have to go and what they have to do. Then you go back to the table, and you just concentrate on the material and on the relationships. And that can be very valuable.
What's it like having worked with one person like Adele O'Brien over a period of time? That would be unique among...
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, it's unique in this country. It's not unique at all in Britain, where they have repertory companies. Well, it's gratifying, because when you go into rehearsal, you're already 2 weeks ahead. You don't have to figure out what this actor is going to do. You can just relax and say, well, you know, I know whatever she's going to do is going to be all right. It's a pleasure.
Say with Autumn Elegy, did you get, which was in this last 13th festival of the Humana plays, did you work with the playwright? Did you all?
Yes, she was here.
Sit,
yeah.
And...
Yeah, she was here the entire time.
Now have production dramaturg involved.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like? I mean, that's a beautiful play.
Yeah. Well, I you know, it was very interesting and extremely productive. I thought everyone was very open about what they thought and what they felt.
Giving her ideas.
Yes. Yes. And Sometimes she accepted them and sometimes she didn't. But when she didn't, she would give you very sound reason. Why? And it was very open. It was a very open situation. Everybody talked very openly and very freely and easily about it. And that was a tribute to her, the playwright, because she was the one who was responsible for that atmosphere and the director.
In terms of the Humana Festival, I wanted to discuss its impact on a variety of things, the playwright, theater at large, Louisville.
Well, it has been primarily for playwrights, the Humana Festival, as I said earlier. And I think that it's happened that people who come here are producers and agents looking for new talent, and not necessarily acting talent. And the way television devours material these days, they are here looking. I mean, John Patrick Shanley, the man who wrote Moonstruck, had one of his first successes here, which was a play called Danny in the Deep Blue Sea. That was John Patrick Shanley, and several writers have gone on to write for television, because television its appetite for material is just endless. It's a bottomless pit, and sometimes a real pit.
Do you think that regional theaters, resident theaters, need to have an identity in order to be a success? Or do they have identities no matter what?
Oh, I think they do no matter what. I think regional theater is, regional theater's identity is defined by the community in which it exists, I think. And one of the reasons I was so impressed originally with ATL was because of its relationship to the community. I remember when I first came here, and you go out into the community and people would talk about our theater. They were very possessive about it, and that didn't just happen. I mean, there was a great concentrated effort on the part of John and his staff in those early days to really relate the theater to the community and make people feel that it was theirs and they belonged here, and they could contribute to it, which they do.
So that a community might more reflect the community than, say, the artistic director?
Well, I think it's a matter, as most things in the theater are, it's a matter of give and take. It's a two-way street, the community and the theater.
At what point do you know what plays are going to be the next season?
Well, I mean, that's that varies from year to year. I mean, when they begin the subscription drive for the next season, they have to announce a series, and we don't always do that. I mean, we don't always do what we say we're going to do, and it's changed availability of actors and directors and material, and a lot of things can happen in a couple of months' time to change.
Do you think that the Actors Theatre responds to what is going on, say, at the Kentucky Center for the Arts or the Kentucky Contemporary Theatre? Is there a response to that, perhaps, in the choices of plays that we have to make? Like entertainment as opposed to...
Well, I don't know. I think Derby Dinner Theater does appeal, I think, and does it consciously, and I'm sure they would not deny it, to a different kind of audience. Some of the same, but primarily a different kind of audience. What you always try to do is, I think, is try to offer as wide a variety as you can. And no matter what you do, not everybody's going to be happy. That's a reality that you learn to face in the theater. No matter how well you do a play, how well you play a part, how beautiful the costumes are, there's always going to be somebody who doesn't like it.
Which leads me to reviews and critics and their roles. How do you perceive?
Well, there again, I mean, that is one man's opinion, and the only difference is that it appears in print, which gives it some weight. I remember when I was in New York, I was working at Lincoln Center. I was walking down Sixth Avenue one day, and this man approached me on the street, and he said, I don't care what John Simon says about you. I think you're wonderful. Well, I hadn't seen the John Simon review, and I was a little taken aback, and I didn't have the courage to look at it for several months and ask some friends about it. And I said, is it really bad? They said, oh, no, it's not really bad. It's just his opinion. Eventually, I did look at it, and he said that as long as the Lincoln Center Repertory Theater was going to hire non-actors like Ray Fry, they had no future. So, I mean, he's come down on a lot of very good people, so I felt I was in good company.
Do you tend to read the reviews?
Yes, I read them.
Like the day after?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I don't really think they affect me.
In a, what used to be a two newspaper town, now it's one newspaper town. What used to be a two critic town, now it's kind of one critic and then a few are getting turns. That's a lot of power to wield.
Yes. Well, that's true of New York.
And that's what I was going to say.
It's true of New York.
Is it like New York?
It's Frank Rich. You know, it's the New York Times. It's a make or break situation. It's too bad. It used to be in the theater that there was a middle ground, that it would be an interesting playwright, maybe not operating at the top of his form, but still interesting. Or it would be a star, or an appealing and interesting actor or actress, and it wasn't a great success, but it could survive for a while, because people were interested, and they would go and support this, and people could maybe make some or most of their money back, investors could. Now it's hit or flop, and there is no middle ground.
Either in New York or in Louisville?
Oh, well, in Louisville it doesn't much matter that way. I mean, we are subscribed here very heavily, and it does affect attendance, I think, but you do it anyway, you know, and it's, if the critic doesn't like it, that's his privilege. But I find most old-time subscribers in Louisville want to come and make up their own mind.
What about the classics in context?
Well, I think that's an incredibly stimulating idea, and it's in the process of developing, I think, into something really interesting. It would be nice, ideally, if it could all happen within a month. If the orchestra and the opera company and the ballet and the theater, and if we could do a month or 6 weeks of the Victorians or of the Russians, that would be nice. And I think eventually it might come to that.
Do you think that the classics in context will be kind of like the Humana Festival for Actors Theatre?
Oh, yeah, I think when John started the Humana Festival here, well, it wasn't the Humana Festival even then,
right.
It was just the Great American Play Contest. That was rather rare in the country. And now lots and lots of resident theaters have a new play program. And some of them are doing festivals, but some of them include at least one new play on their season schedule. And I think that's very important.
And that's as a result, you think, of what we've done?
Oh, here? I think so. I think so, directly.
Do you think that Louisville is culturally rich compared with other towns you've
been
in them?
Oh, yes. I do. I think it's remarkable.
I wonder why it is.
Well, a lot of it has to do with corporate support, certainly, and corporations wisely trying to attract the best grade executive talent that they can find are interested in offering them some diversity in their life in Louisville, and I think it's important, and they fortunately have realized that. But it's remarkable for a town this size to have a first-rate orchestra and a ballet company, an opera company, and several professional theaters. It's amazing. The only town that I can think is comparable would be Seattle, which has an enormous theater community. I think there are 9 professional theater companies in Seattle, and the Seattle rep has 27,000 subscribers.
I understand that at Actors Theater we have open rehearsals. Are you comfortable with that?
Oh yeah, that doesn't bother me at all. It does bother a lot of people, but I don't think that you should be afraid to make mistakes. And I mean, that's what rehearsals are for. And I think for the Apprentice Company here, I think it's a very valuable experience for them to be able to come in and watch rehearsals. And considering all of the hard work that they do for us, I think it's the least we can do for them.
Have you, over the years, worked with the Apprentice Company people?
Yeah.
What kinds of things do you all do with them?
We very often go in and have sort of question and answer periods, and sometimes direct them in monologues or in short plays.
And yeah. You've done that?
I've done some of it, yeah.
Now, what about A Christmas Carol? You're famous for that. You have to be sick of doing it, but it's very popular here in Louisville. And the other thing that's been popular has been Peter Ekstrom's, that wonderful...
Gift of the Magi.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what to say about Christmas Carol. I just... I didn't do it for 5 years because I felt that I was really sort of burned out on it, and I've done it now the last 2 years, and I don't know. I was just...
Louisville loves it.
I know.
My nephews.
I try very hard to keep it fresh and to keep it alive, and and it becomes hard work.
Being a resident member, you don't have to... That's what you were talking about in New York, doing the same thing for a long period of time.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that here, do you?
Well, I do with Christmas Carol.
Well, not counting that one.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what you like about having been a resident member for so long.
Yes. Yeah. See, I was in the very beginning of the resident theater movement in San Francisco. At that time, there wasn't even... a contract. LORT, the League of Regional Theaters, didn't exist, and we worked on an off-Broadway contract in San Francisco for a number of years. At that time, there was the Arena in Washington, the Alley in Houston, and San Francisco Actors Workshop. They were the three major, even before the Guthrie, they were the three major resident theaters. Regional theaters in the country. The thing I liked several years ago, John Houseman was on one of those morning shows, the Today Show or something like that, and an interviewer said, "Tell me, everyone is going around saying that the theater is dead. What is your reaction to that?" And he said, "Well, yes," he said, "the theater is dead in New York, but it's alive and well elsewhere in the country." And I think that's very true.
Did you all, as young people in San Francisco, foresee what was going to happen all over the United States eventually, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. We worked for a number of years. I can't remember exactly. And then eventually the Ford Foundation got into the act, McNeil Lowry, and we were given a grant so that we could quit our part-time jobs, and we were given a living wage. And that, of course, is when, really when the regional theater movement began. It's when the Ford Foundation moved in and nurtured it.
And it did.
Yes. It was wonderful.
Is there anything else you would like to add?
No, not particularly, except that I enjoy and appreciate working in Louisville, and Louisville has been very good to me, and I would like to thank all of those people who have been good to me.
Thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.